Welcome to the X-Line, the show all about the Fujifilm X-Series cameras and the stories behind the gear. I'm Mark Sadowski, and this is episode 5. I want to apologize for the lateness of this particular episode. The last couple months has been busy. Wedding season is coming into full swing, and I've been busy photographing weddings and editing photos. So it's been a little hectic, but it's been fun. The last two weddings I mentioned before that I was going to rent the Fujifilm X-Pro2, and wedding number one is when I used it in tandem with the Fuji X-T1, and then wedding number two, when I had to give back the X-Pro2, was X-T1 and X-T10 all together. And I've been trying to figure out how I'm going to do that episode because I want to be very thorough with my experience with those cameras. And in that time, I got the chance to interview Kevin Mullins and Andrew Billington. So rather than hold those interviews off, because they were very fun interviews, I am going to pause on my personal experience and bring you the interview. So you're going to hear me talk a little bit about my personal experience, but I mean, that's neither here nor there, because in this particular episode, it's going to feature the interview with Kevin Mullins, and he's a personal hero of mine when it comes to photography. I admire his work a lot. He is probably the first photographer, and I'm sure for many people as well, he is the first photographer to really show me that you can do a full wedding with the Fuji's X system. And I mean, his work is just breathtaking. If you're a fan of the documentary style wedding photography, or just, you know, enjoy seeing candid photography, you know, Kevin is just absolutely on top of his game. And I just think the world of his work. So I'm proud to have him as the first interview for the show. And so before I play the interview, I just want to say that I was a little bit nervous. This was the first. Well, I've interviewed him before, but this is the first time I spoke with him in a while. So bear with me. But it was a lot of fun. It was a tremendous honor to have him interviewed for the show. And without further ado, let's listen to the interview. And here we are with Kevin Mullins. He is a UK photographer who uses the Fuji system. And how's it going, Kevin?
Hey, Mark. Everything's good here. Well, the sun is shining for a change in the UK, so all good.
Oh, there you go. It's actually pretty cloudy here, so I think we got your weather. So you're a Fuji X photographer. Now, I got to ask you this. Feel weird saying that you're an X photographer? Because the last time I said that I was a Fuji X photographer, or I mentioned I was an X photographer, and somebody says, "Oh, really? Why did you quit?" I'm like, "Yeah. Oh no, wait a minute. Let me refrain."
Yeah, no, I do. I think most people in the industry now understand what the terminology is. But yeah, I mean, X photographer generally means a person who's given up. And, yeah. You know, I think in Japan, it's probably very different. They probably don't have that kind of terminology, and that's where it's all born from. So, yeah, it can be quite a challenge sometimes to explain.
It really is a members-only terminology.
Yeah, exactly.
So, excellent. So, glad to have you here. I interviewed you before in the past, and had a great time talking with you before. And I have to say, I'm a personal fan of your photography. Your wedding images are just absolutely stunning. And so, I wanted to start with what kind of gear did you use before the Fuji series?
Well, up until I started shooting weddings in 2009, and for the first pretty much 2 full years, I was using a Canon system. So I had Canon 5D Mark IIs, and I ended up with a 1DX, I think, and kind of all of the prime lenses. I didn't really do the zooms, but the primes. So yeah, it was a Canon shooter, and you know, I'll never say that it was a bad thing. It was a great camera. It was just a bit too big and expensive and heavy, but the images and you know everything about the cameras was superb. They were really good cameras, and you know, a lot of people are still very happy with it in their Canon world, and you know, it's all good for those people.
So what was the impetus to get you into the Fuji system? What sparked that interest?
Well, I think if we go back to 2011, there was at Photokina in Germany, which I didn't attend, by the way, but I kind of saw some articles about it. And there was on the Fujifilm stand, they had the I think it was the prototype then of the original X100, and it was just in this kind of little glass box, and I don't think anybody was allowed to touch it or anything like that. And I kind of looked at this, and I read the review of it, or I read a write-up of what the camera should be about. Shortly after Photokina, and I thought, I don't know, maybe this is the way forward for me. You know, I like to really kind of get into the wedding and really shoot it from the inside out. And you know, I looked at this camera and I thought, well, if this can deliver the same image quality that my Canons are doing, then you know, surely this is the way forward. It's smaller, it's lighter, it's cheaper. You know, as a fixed lens, I quite like that idea of the kind of 35mm full frame equivalent fixed lens option. So I bought it. I put a pre-order in for the camera, and I subsequently found out that I was on the first batch of recipients in the UK from Warehouse Express, which is a big dealership in the UK. And so the camera arrived one Thursday morning, and it just so happened that I had a wedding that afternoon.
Nice.
So I charged it up along with all my Canons. It came along with me to the wedding. I didn't use it for any of the kind of important parts, if you like. I just kind of got it out through the drinks reception. And you know, it was slow, and it was kind of hunting around for focus. But when it worked so well, and the images were so beautiful, and the ergonomics of this camera were amazing. And I literally, you know, pretty much became invisible. You know, you put these big Canon cameras down, and just wander around with this tiny little camera. And I immediately knew that that was the future. The X100 wasn't quite right to, you know, shoot full weddings with at that point. But you know, I knew that this is the kind of direction I wanted to go, and at that time, it really Fuji were the only option for me. I couldn't really afford the Leica systems, you know, and there was nothing else really that was kind of doing the things that the Fuji X100 was promising to do. So yeah, I kind of got that, and then when the X Pro 1 came along, I was writing articles for a magazine at the time, and they asked me if I wanted to review it. So I reviewed it, fell in love with it, bought the whole shebang, £2,500 worth of camera and lenses and everything else, and yeah, I've never really looked back. And that was kind of the start of the end for the Canon system, and you know, it's gone from there.
What were your first lenses for the X Pro One?
So I had the three launch lenses, which were 60mm 2.4 macro, 35 1.4, and the 18mm f/2, of which I still have those three lenses. And now with the X Pro 2, believe it or not, I'm using that 18mm again so much. It's such a good lens, and it's you know, so light that actually with the X Pro 2 and the kind of speed of the autofocus in that system, the 18mm lens has come right back into its own for me. So yeah, it's, you know, 5 years old, that lens, and I'm still using it and loving it.
Nice. So when you made the switch to, you know, to all your weddings with just the Fuji system, how was that? Was that like, that must have been a slightly nervous experience.
Yeah, it was. Well, I don't know whether nervous is the right word, but I kind of phased it in pretty quick. You know, I knew once that X Pro 1 came along, I knew that this was how I wanted to shoot full weddings with. You know, I didn't see the point basically in using a small camera because it was small, and then a big camera because the small camera couldn't do what it was meant to do. So it was an all or nothing situation for me. So yeah, I kind of. You know, I did keep taking the Canons with me for a little while. But pretty quick, I started leaving them in the car. Then I sold off the 5D Mark IIs, you know, and yeah, it went pretty quick. But it was one of those situations where I could see how the cameras would work for me straight away, and I quickly got using back button focus in and kind of up to speed to the focus situation and everything with those cameras. I was using the optical viewfinder a lot, so it was a lot quicker. The optical viewfinder is a lot quicker way to work than the electronic viewfinder in the X-Pro1. So, and really, there's not that much of a difference than using a DSLR, using an optical viewfinder. So, you know, it was just a case of adjusting myself to the different ergonomics of the camera, the different kind of film simulations that I was using, etc. And yeah, I was just kind of, you know, just go for it, do it. I'm a believer in doing things, you know, just get on and do it.
Right on. Just a personal story. I recently photographed a wedding where I used the Fuji X-Pro2, like it was pretty much 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. This was my first attempt at ditching the Canon system, and so I had the Fuji as my primary. I had the 18mm lens on it, and then on the X-T1, mm-hmm. I had the 56mm lens, mm-hmm. and it was I had to use the I usually use the 35mm lens, but the 18mm I had to use because everything was so tight and so compact, and it was a small venue. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it felt great just relying on the X-Pro2. It is substantially faster, and I had such a blast photographing it. And I made the biggest rookie mistake I made was not paying attention to the memory card. I made it through the wedding, the portraits afterwards, and when they were doing their announcements for the reception, you know, I'm having a blast. This thing is firing. I'm not missing anything. Uh-huh. It was just a blast. Then the error message comes up: memory card full. I'm like, shit. And everything was already in action, and I couldn't stop. So I just had to put down the Fuji and pick up my Canon. And yeah, it was just such a difference in weight. It's as though I was picking up the world with a Canon.
It is such a big difference, and I think that's the big thing for everybody. It's just the size, you know. I mean, the image quality of the JPEG, especially from the Fujis, are beautiful. But you know, for people who shoot RAW, that's not really relevant, and it has to come down to size, ergonomics, and kind of speed and stealth, and all of those kind of things. And you're right, there's a big difference between them.
How do you feel about the whole Fuji system and the RAW versus JPEG? Because this is the only camera system that I know of that has such a, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but such a discrepancy in the RAW files compared to the JPEGs. The JPEGs look brilliant, and the RAW files, it's almost like you're really handicapping yourself in the editing process. Do you feel somewhat similar to that, or?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I got paid a penny or a dime for every conversation I had about JPEG versus RAW in the Fuji world, I'd be a very rich person, because, and it's a conversation I enjoy, because I shoot JPEG, and you know, I shot JPEG with my Canon system as well, because for me, it's a workflow thing. It's not necessarily about what's best, RAW or JPEG. You know, if I was doing a, you know, super important corporate shoot that meant that the image needed to be 65 feet wide or something, and it had to be lots of retouching, then of course RAW is the way. But when you're editing 400 pictures and, you know, you need to kind of do it in a timely manner, then for me, JPEG works. And I think, you know, you're right about the fact that the JPEGs look very different to the RAW files. And that's obviously because of the film simulations that Fuji build into the cameras.
Yeah.
And whilst, you know, Canon had, to a certain extent, I don't think they called them film simulations, they called them profiles or something like that. And they had like standard and faithful and neutral and various bits and pieces. But there wasn't much, you know, they were pretty much tweaked, slightly tweaked RAW equivalents. And so, yeah, the RAW files are very different in the Fuji world compared to the JPEGs that they spit out. And, you know, it's there's no kind of, yeah, you should shoot JPEG or you should shoot RAW. There's no, you know, I don't get involved in those kind of conversations about which is right or which is wrong. But for me personally, from a workflow point of view and the fact that the cameras produce such beautiful JPEGs, that's the way I go. And interestingly, you know, you were just talking about the card situation on your X-Pro2.
Yes.
Now we have two card slots. And so I've actually gone down the route of shooting. It, you know, makes no sense not to use those card slots when available. So, you know, I've gone down the route of shooting JPEG and actually shooting compressed RAW, which is my backup. Effectively, that goes to the second slot. So, you know, if you've got data redundancy there, then use it, of course. But JPEG, for me, has always been the way, and it was the big attraction for me with the Fuji system. Just, you know, the camera does everything for me. It's, you know, it's like, that's the whole point, isn't it? You know, you sit on a train, the train takes you where you need to go. You get a camera, the camera does everything for you. Perfect. That's my ideal situation.
That was, that took some getting used to. Again, referring to the last wedding that I photographed, I was looking through the RAW files because I took so many photos with the X-Pro2 that the editing, first of all, it kind of bogged down Lightroom, the RAW files from the Fuji. Mm-hmm. And I went through half of the wedding just completely disappointed with my edits. Yeah. And it's not that I missed the shot or anything. It's just, just nothing was working. I'm like, wow, if only I could. And then I looked at the other card slot that had the JPEG files. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. No, that's just fine. I just wasted 3 days worth of work when I could have just used these files here. So I think I'm done now.
Yeah, I'm in the gray, and it, you know, of course, there's always going to be situations where, you know, like white balance and really dodgy light situations and various bits and pieces where, you know, perhaps RAW would be the only way forward. But I think by and large, for me, you know, certainly one of the reasons I invested in the system was because of the speed of workflow and the JPEGs and the beautiful images it creates. Especially, I mean, the Acros film simulation, the black and white Acros film simulation is just gorgeous. You know, and I spent kind of 5 years editing images to look like that, and now the camera does it for me. It's like, ooh, there we go, perfect.
Yeah, I only took a few shots with the Acros. I only rented the X-Pro2. It's one of these, I mentioned it in a previous episode, where I kind of regret what I did. Back when the X-Pro2 was announced, I had reserved my copy, but then Fuji went ahead and reduced the prices of all their other cameras. I'm like, X-T1 is looking really nice. And then when the camera store did their review saying that the X-Pro2's autofocus was just marginally better, I'm like, oh, well, crap. Well, I'll just get that. I'll save some money. Mm-hmm. And I did, and I bought it. I bought the X-T1, and I'm not disappointed with it at all. I love the camera, but when I rented the X-Pro2, I'm like, oh God, what have I done? Because this thing is lightning fast, and when you're using the optical viewfinder, it's like,
yeah,
I mean, it's a complete game changer. And so, so something I'm saving up for now.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, the X-T1, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people have learned to rely on the tilting screen and the prism viewfinder. And, you know, for many people, the X-Pro2 just isn't an option. And, you know, presumably at some point there'll be an X-T2 that they can kind of look at. But yeah, I mean, there is a substantial difference between the X-Pro2 and the X-T1 in pretty much every single department. But the X-T1 is still, you know, still a great camera, and I actually still use it. I still take it to weddings, and sometimes, you know, I did it on this Saturday just gone, during the drinks reception. I found actually I needed to, in order to do the shots I wanted to do, I needed the tilt screen. I needed to shoot from the hip, but be able to look down and see what I was framing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, I needed that. And so it came out of the bag. But it's, you know, it swings and roundabouts. Everybody, some people, yeah, you know, either like me and kind of just happy to go with whichever one's best, or, you know, the ergonomics of the camera are important to people. And some people, you know, with their, I think it's left-eyed people would have problems with the X-Pro2, you know, so it's, I think it's pretty good that Fuji are creating two systems that essentially give everybody the best of both worlds and they can choose what they want.
You know, actually, all right, this is where you cue the Benny Hill music. When I was photographing with the two Fujis, I don't know if this is something that happened to you, but when you mentioned the ergonomics between the two cameras, like I never got the way people were really passionate about the way they were arguing, you know, tilt screen, the and all that stuff until I used the two cameras side by side, and I noticed that. When I was using the X-Pro2, the joystick, oh my God, that thing is such a lovely game changer. But if I was going from the X-T1 switching to the X-Pro2 during a particular moment, I noticed that I would instinctively go for the buttons rather than the joystick and mm-hmm. then just mess myself up for just a little second. I mean, nothing that was harmful, but it's just one of those oops. And then yeah. I would go to the joystick. And then when I would go back to the X-T1, I would be looking for the joystick. And and then I would have the moments where the viewfinder, because they're in different places, I would pick up the X-T1 and put it towards the side. I'm like, oh, that's not where the viewfinder is. And then vice versa. So like that muscle memory was constantly screwing me up for like the beginning part of the wedding. I don't know if you had any adjustments similar.
No, I did, because I mean, I used the X-Pro 1 for a long time and I was still using it even when the X-T 1 came out. So you know, the X-Pro 1 and the X-Pro 2 very similar, physically they're very similar.
Yeah,
so yeah, I did, but I still did, you know, I still find myself kind of bumping things around, and you know, kind of so occasionally I've reached down to pull out the tilting screen from the X-Pro 2 to find it's not there. These things happen, but I don't think even when I was shooting with my 5Ds and the 1DX, there was too much similarities. There's all kinds of buttons in different places and everything like that, you know. So, it's good. I think it's good that people have an opinion and they're passionate about these things. And that means that they're keen on the system, they're keen on the development of the system.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a good thing.
First world problems, but a good way.
Yeah, exactly.
So...
Go ahead.
Funny you mentioned that, the passion behind the Fuji photography. Now, this might be just because I'm among the passionate, but the passion for the Fuji photography, I feel, or I've noticed, is unlike any other camera system, where, you know, you have people that are just, I don't want to say rabid, but just the enthusiasm for photography is just so much higher than any other system out there. Do you agree with that sentiment? And why would you, like, what do you think is that magic sauce that Fuji has that other camera systems don't?
Well, I think you're definitely right. There's a whole lot of fervent passion about them. But, I wonder, because I don't move in the circles of, say, the Olympus or Sony group. So, you know, perhaps the passion is there, too. I really don't know. But, I think it all kind of started with the physical design of the cameras and how kind of beautiful they looked and how retro they looked. Now, I actually don't care for any of that stuff. The reason I love the X-Pro range so much is because it's a little black box. That's it. It doesn't have any chrome on it. It doesn't have any, glowing buttons or anything like that. And, I would, in terms of the X100 and all of those other cameras, you know, I'm much happier if they just produced a tiny little box, no logos, just black. You know, I want it to take pictures. I don't care what it looks like. But that's just me. But, you know, initially, I think a lot of people got interested in it because of the way it looked and the way it felt and the kind of retro elements to it. And certainly the guys that used to shoot film, you know, it's kind of brought back memories of those kind of systems and the tactile nature of being able to use the exposure triangle from, you know, the top plate of these cameras. So I think that's kind of where it started. And then, you know, of course, Fuji started really embracing this new, very embryonic community that was growing up around it. And, you know, they started doing firmware updates and listening and, you know, taking photographers to Japan and, you know, listening to what they had to say and feedback and taking things on board and rolling it out and rolling it out in a timely manner and not charging people for these firmware updates. And, you know, I think that really has impassioned a lot of photographers. And, you know, I think if you think about the XE2 update that happened at the end of last year, that was pretty much a new camera. All these people who had an XE2 for 2 years, they basically got a new camera in a, you know, in a firmware update. Same as the XT1 when the firmware update came for that. You know, there's all kinds of new things rolled out. And I think, you know, people, whilst, you know, you don't necessarily see the Fuji staff from Japan doing their bits and pieces, but they're there and they're almost like this kind of hidden set of eyes and ears in the community. And you know, they're kind of listening and doing their things, and I think that really plays well for people. You know, it works for me anyway.
I'm personally glad they kept the film in Fujifilm. When you mentioned the film simulations and everything, just the passion they put into making their imaging as close to the original films that they produced, I think is something that is that just gives it a whole beautiful feel and makes it unique to other systems. I don't mean to interrupt, I'll let you talk, but mm-hmm. Just the fact that it's not just some stupid filter is just, it makes me feel good.
I mean, I was lucky enough to, you know, to be one of the photographers that went to Japan a few years back, and we sat in a room with the engineers, the color engineers, the guys who are creating these film simulations. And some of them are the same guys that worked on the film emulation stock, you know, in the 70s and 80s, and they have this incredible knowledge and appetite for color and contrast, and everything they talked about went right over my head because it was far too mathematically based, and they were talking about hues and contrast and saturation and all this amazing knowledge, and they are taking the knowledge from decades worth of knowledge from creating film and, you know, putting it into digital cameras. And so that, you know, and that's another reason why I kind of shoot the JPEGs, because I think, well, it makes me kind of sad thinking of these guys doing all this work and then not using their talent, because when you shoot raw, you don't use it.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, they have these people, you know, and they have all of this experience from, you know, way back when for the film stuff that they are putting into the cameras. And I think definitely that's an appeal for a lot of people.
Does it make you feel sad that Kodak never took advantage of that? It seems like something, I mean, this is something that I kind of lamented because I used to love Kodachrome. Mm-hmm. And seeing just, because Kodak made some great films too. Mm-hmm. Seeing that, I would like to see Kodak do the same thing, kind of what Fujifilm is doing. And then when Fuji came out with the classic chrome, I was like, oh, that's beautiful. That scratched that itch.
Yeah, absolutely. And that classic chrome, up until then, I didn't really shoot much color at all. But as soon as classic chrome came along, you know, I shoot a lot more color now. The history of photography is littered with companies that have been and gone. And, you know, who knows what will happen in the future. But, you know, I think it's a brave move by Fujifilm, really, to put so much emphasis on the film simulations. But, you know, it's worked. It's worked for them. You know, there's a lot of people who buy into the system because of that. And there isn't really any other cameras out there that are doing that, or certainly doing it as well, I don't think.
Yeah. So back to the wedding photography. Again, I'm a huge fan of your style of photography, as well as what you could get away with. For example, here in the States, or at least here in New England, one of the shots that I absolutely envy is your ability to capture the bride coming down the aisle, but in the foreground you have the groom standing there with his back turned. It's going to be a surprise. And in my mind, I'm like, I wish I could stand where he was standing. Because here, that's usually where the priest is standing or the JP. And if I were standing there, I would be lynched by the audience.
We do have, in the UK, sometimes you can do that and sometimes you can't. You know, it does depend a little bit on the vicar and the kind of registrar. I would say probably 50% of the time I can stand at the front of the aisle when the bride is coming down, but then I'll move. As soon as she gets to the front, I move out of the way and go to the back of the church.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm at the back of the church all of the time. But yeah, you're right. It's a beautiful picture. And we don't have the concept of, what do you call it in the United States, first look, or, you know, when the bride and groom meet each other first in the morning and see each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that over here. So when the bride is walking down the aisle, you know, that is the first time the groom sees the bride on the wedding day. So it's, you know, it's a really important moment. It's not something that can be repeated or missed or, you know, messed up.
Right.
So, you know, it's nice. And the nicer the church and all that kind of stuff, the better it is, of course.
Right. Well, how do you, this is going to be another one of them cliche questions, and I'm sorry, but how has the Fuji really improved your style of photography? Because you are a very candid photographer. So during those moments where, if, for example, you're standing up in front where everybody in the world will see you, you know, how do you feel that the Fuji system has improved your style, or you know, what do you feel it brings ergonomically to the table for you?
Well, it's definitely, like, without doubt, it's enabled me to get more emotive pictures and getting closer, take the picture, fill the frame, move away, without disturbing the moment. I think, you know, like you say about being at the front of the church, yeah, it's obvious that you're the photographer if you're there. But sometimes you will shoot with the electronic shutter or, you know, use the flip screen if it's, you know, in some circumstances with churches. But beyond the ceremony itself, you know, because that's only a small part of the day, it's the ability to really just blend in as much as possible and shoot. You know, I shoot with the X100 and the X Pro 2 with just one hand, and the other hand I'll walk around with a drink in my hand and just raise the camera, take a shot and move away. And you know, that's really enabled me to kind of get closer and get really the types of pictures that I think and I hope are real memories that when the bride and groom look back on, you know, in 10, 20, 30 years time, they can remember actual things that happened rather than things that the photographer made happen. You know, there's very different styles of photography, of course, but for me personally, if a particular moment in time was happening or was about to happen, and then it didn't happen because of my presence or my circumstance of being there, then, you know, that would hurt me. I would hate that to happen. You know, if somebody's about to hug somebody, for example, and then actually they see the photographer with a big camera pointing in their face, and then they decide not to hug and smile for the camera instead, then, you know, that entire moment has been erased from history, let alone not photographed it. And because of the, you know, because of me being stood there. So I do try my very best to, you know, to be as kind of discreet as possible, moving quick. The camera is nearly always down by my hip. I raise it when I need to shoot. I don't walk around with the camera in front of my face. You know, and you just kind of do your best to get those things. And, you know, even with smaller DSLRs, you could probably do that. But when I had the bigger DSLR systems, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't get in and take those shots. You know, the Canon 1DX sounds like scaffolding falling down when it goes off. You know, it's just, you just can't do it. Or I certainly couldn't do it. It's really empowered me to get the types of pictures that I really want to deliver to the clients, you know, which is emotion, hopefully emotion filled real moments.
Yeah. And, yeah, I totally agree. That's a very interesting way of putting it. Scaffolding falling down.
Yeah. It was a noisy camera, that.
It was noisy. It was bright. It just basically, and if you had the telephoto lens attached, you're very bright, and it's basically here I am.
Yeah.
So how do guests approach you? Because one of the things that I've noticed, if I'm using just the Fuji during a wedding, or that moment where I'm just holding the Fuji camera, everyone always comes up to me and says, "Hey, wow, that's a really nice Leica you have there." I don't know what your treatment is like over across the pond there. How do guests approach you when they notice you?
Yeah, sometimes you have that conversation, you know, oh, is that a film camera or is that a Leica? And yeah, you know, occasionally you have that conversation, especially with people who are into photography. But really, you know, the conversation I have with most people is usually, oh, are you alone? Are you by yourself? Or who are you here with, the bride or the groom? Blah, blah, blah. And that's great because that means they don't even think of me as the professional photographer. You know, I'm just somebody else who's at the wedding and by myself, sat old Kev by himself at the wedding. but, you know, and that's a perfect thing. But it's really, you know, it's usually towards the end of the day when people have figured out that actually, yeah, he is the professional photographer and, you know, done the bits and pieces that they've kind of figured it all out. You know, they might have had a few drinks or something and then they're kind of like, oh, look at my camera, and then they'll wave a Nikon D750 or something in your face. And, you know, makes no difference. It's always fun. And you know, I've never ever, not once as a client or even a guest, said anything kind of negative about it and, you know, kind of said, you know, shouldn't you be using bigger cameras or anything like that? The only people ever that ask me that question are other photographers.
Yeah.
And it's never ever been an issue for a client or a guest. Certainly not that I'm aware of. They've never said it to me. And part of my branding, part of my style and everything is that, you know, I tell them I use small cameras. That's part of how I work. So they're probably expecting it, but it certainly shouldn't be an issue. And I think it's fun when people start talking to you about your cameras, you know, it's great. It means that you're approachable and, you know, you're not seen as this kind of, you know, in the UK, there's some terrible horror stories about wedding photographers and, you know, the kind of history behind them. So I don't want to be lumped in with that.
Right on. Although when you mentioned the person with the huge camera system that comes in as a guest at the wedding, it's the best jujitsu move that I feel that we could do when they're carrying this massive lens and massive camera. It's like, oh yeah, I have this. What do you got? And you just pull out this tiny thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. And look what it could do.
Yeah, exactly. It's a real conversation stopper. And they go off and go and have a beer or something. Instead. Yeah.
On the bright side, you could sell that and buy this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know,
it's still come out on top.
Yeah, it's a bit of a running joke, but it's not far from the truth. But you know, I always say I sold my DSLR system, bought a new car, and then with the change, I bought my Fuji system. And it's a little bit tongue in cheek, but it's not too far off the truth.
Yeah. Oh my God, the amount of money I've put into the Canon system. I don't want to think about that. I am close to making the switch to full time Fuji. I'm happy that it's coming close. I'm not entirely comfortable with it just yet. The one thing I'm looking forward to is the new speed light that Fuji is going to come out with. It should have been out this month, but I think they postponed it to sometime in midsummer.
Yeah, I think so too. That's what I read. I don't really use the speed light systems at all. I'm more of a kind of ambient natural light shooter when possible. So I haven't even been following that, but I know a whole load of the guys who, you know, who do some amazing stuff with speed lights. They're really looking forward to it, you know, to have this TTL ability and be able to kind of link them all together and do whatever else speed light gurus do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a shame that it's been delayed because, you know, it's wedding season and these wedding guys, they want it. They want it now and ready for kind of June, July, August. You know, you don't probably want to be running a new speedlight system right in the middle of the season. You want to test it and bed it in a little bit.
Yeah.
But there you go. You know.
But that's all right. But I get what I wanted to bring up is one of the things that's profoundly helped me with my own progress in learning the Fuji system is your website. Actually, it used to be part of your wedding photography site, but now you have f16.click.
That's right. Yeah, f16.click. That labor of love.
labor of love, and it's totally worth it because I advise everybody who has a Fuji system that wants to learn more, even if you're not shooting just Fuji, to go check that out because your advice in there and your I think early on with the X-Pro1 and those cameras, your workaround for the autofocus system, because when it was a little bit slow, your workaround system really, really helped coping with that handicap, one could say. But tell me about the evolution of that site, because before it was just on KevinMullinsPhotography.com, and then I think you had Owly as a site. So how did it evolve to F16?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I started blogging about my journey with those cameras on my wedding photography site, which is KevinMullinsPhotography.co.uk, and you know, I was getting a lot of traffic, a lot of interest in this kind of new system. So, you know, I carried on blogging and doing bits and pieces on my Kevin Mullins site. And essentially what happened was my website became more known for kind of Fuji stuff than it did for wedding photography. And so in Google's eyes, that wasn't a great thing. So I needed to reestablish my wedding site as a, you know, as a wedding photography site. Clients, my brides and grooms don't care about, you know, understanding back button focus and all that kind of stuff. So I moved it. I just switched it all off, kind of switched all the Fuji stuff off and left it for a bit. I was, you know, had a really busy season, so I just kind of carried on doing my thing. And then I was getting a lot of requests for some of the older articles and stuff. So yeah, I set up the Airwall website, which was a ridiculously named titled website. But the idea of it was, you know, somewhere to host all of the Fuji stuff and all of my personal work, et cetera, et cetera. So I started moving it all onto there, which was a big job. And then I had another really busy season. And I think it was something like a July 2 years ago, something like that. And I never work. I always take kind of half of July and all of August off, school holidays. You know, I don't actually work, which is a bit odd, but I was a wedding photographer. So that kind of took a bit of a back burner then as well. And then I was kind of thought, well, you know what, I really want to get this out there. I've got a lot of stuff I need to, you know, need to share. And so I bought the new domain, f16.click, got quite a clean WordPress template on there and just moved everything across, and including all of the old stuff as well, which a lot of it is, you know, it's useful still, but it's not necessarily relevant these days. But I made the decision to keep it there because, you know, people are still searching. People still do have X-Pro 1s and X100s originals and all that kind of stuff. So
it's going, you know, for it's, cheap now. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. Considering I paid $2,500 for my set at the beginning. but yeah. And so the site, you know, I really love it. I love that F16 website. I like the community that's building up in the comments. You know, I don't get to publish on there as much as I'd like. I'd like to do one big session, one big blog post a month if I can, you know, which is hopefully, you know, what I always try and do is make sure it's useful to people rather than just be a, you know, a kind of, here's some pictures of mine. I like it to be more educational if possible, you know, and of course I can only educate my own, the stuff that I understand and that I know, and hopefully that's useful to people. That's the plan.
Right on. And lastly, I want to touch on is, the video that you recently made on the X-Pro 2. Now, just a little backstory. My dad just had a birthday, and when my kids were singing happy birthday to him with a cake, I decided to use my X-T1 to do the video, thinking, how bad can it really be? And then I answered my own question. But the X-Pro 2, surprisingly, is a very nice video camera. I mean, it's no Panasonic still, yeah. But you did a really, really nice video of your artist friend. What was his name again? I'm sorry.
It was Jeff. Yeah, Jeff. Jeff Ketcher. He's a friend of mine. And yeah, I've never really done film. That was the first thing I've ever filmed. But I talked to him for a while, and I knew that once the X-Pro 2 came out, I wanted to do something just to test it, really, for the video stuff.
Well, that's one hell of a test, because I wouldn't have even known that was the first time you've ever done video, because of the way how well you produced it. But tell me about, like, how you went into it, because you're into still photography, I would say 99% of the time, this 1% or this 0.1% of the time that you did video. What was it like, and are you going to do more?
Yeah, there's a really good friend of mine called Neil James, who's a wedding photographer in the UK. But he does these great kind of mini documentaries, and he's not a Fuji user, but he is a great videographer and documentary maker, short kind of clips. And I've been looking at his stuff for ages and thinking, oh, this is superb. I'd really love to kind of do something like this. But, you know, I have no kind of commercial ambition for that. But he, you know, I looked at his stuff and then I spent literally months on YouTube looking at these kind of social documentary interview type films. So I basically drew up a little kind of timeline, if you like, for a 2-minute clip. Spoke to Jeff and went over there, you know, got the camera. And it was with the pre-production X-Pro2 that I had as well. So it wasn't even the finished body. But it all went wrong, basically. Everything was very different to how I planned it. Jeff decided to just do his own thing and not listen to anything I was saying. And because I'm a documentary photographer, I didn't really, you know, I didn't have the confidence, I suppose, to direct him and say, right, can you just hold on there? Don't do this. Don't do that. Let's do that again. Let's take this again. And I basically filmed it as it happened. So, you know, I kind of moved things around and he just carried on doing it. So it was kind of shot in real time. And then I edited it in Premiere Pro, and which is, I quite enjoyed that element of it. You know, found the same track and yeah, always in my mind, I just thought, right, if you keep it under 2 minutes or around 2 minutes, then it can't be that bad. The longer it goes on, if it's bad and it's long, then that's really bad. So yeah, I just did it and I did enjoy it and I will do more of it. And I'm interested to see how the next generation of the kind of Fuji cameras come along, if and when they have like 4K video and all that kind of support. You know, I'd really like to explore it more. But yeah, as you say, right now, in terms of the video camera stuff, Panasonic, Sony's, they're the ones that the guys are using and using them really, really well. So I hope Fuji can kind of catch up with them to a certain extent.
Well, rumors are that the X-T2 is going to have 4K and the X-Pro2 actually is capable of 4K. They just didn't flip that switch for some reason or another.
Yeah, I don't know about the X-T2, but my understanding of the X-Pro2 is that, yeah, there's capability, but the circuitry inside is can't support it and kind of gets too hot and all kinds of stuff like that. So I think reading between the lines, the sensor can do it, but the mechanical elements inside the camera can't support it. That's my understanding.
Yeah,
I might be completely wrong. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, hopefully in the future, with the X-T2 and whatever else comes out after that, then there will be 4K stuff. And I have a new 4K monitor in my office, and I'm, you know, kind of looking at it and looking at all my stills pictures and seeing how kind of you can see spots on people's faces and all sorts of things that you just never really noticed before.
That's an eye opener.
Yeah, it is.
All right, so this is a cheeky question, but who will have 4K first, Fuji or Canon?
You know what, I am so far behind the line in terms of what Canon are up to these days. I would have thought they already had it. I don't know, do they not have it in the 5D Mark 4s and 5s or whatever else they're up to nowadays? I just do not keep up with it. I don't know. I have no idea. No idea. Pass.
Right on.
Can't answer.
That's okay. Are you going to do more videos?
Yeah, I hope so. I did enjoy it, and I will do more. And maybe in the end it will be something I can roll out commercially as well and do bits and pieces. But it's, you know, I'm a stills photographer. I love doing weddings. I love doing that. I will never shoot video at a wedding. It's just not something I have in my makeup to do that. There are people out there who do that really, really well, and they can keep it. But yeah, you know what? I really want to do stuff with my kids, and I really. Something that Neil has taught me is that sound, more importantly, sound, you know, having recording of people's voices is such a powerful thing to keep, you know, as a legacy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sound and video obviously comes together with that. But, you know, I'm talking to you now on a Yeti microphone, and I take this thing home with me at least once a week. And I just stick it on the kitchen table and just press record on the laptop and just let it film, record the kids eating their dinner and, you know, screaming at each other and fighting over the iPad and whatever else.
Sounds like my house.
Yeah, exactly. And but it's that kind of stuff that, you know, when you're in 50 years' time and you're listening back to that, that will be a real memories, you know. And video just adds complexity to it, I think, to a certain extent. But I really want to do some stuff with the kids, and I really want to do stuff for the family. I really want to explore, proper kind of black and white videography as well, which really kind of sings to me. I love that idea of that. So maybe that's what will come along soon for me.
Nice. Well, this has been a great chat with you. It's great to talk to you again, Kevin. Why don't you tell the audience where they could find your stuff on the web?
Okay. Well, thanks for having me, Mark, for the start. And my wedding website is kevinmullinsphotography.co.uk. The Fuji stuff and my personal work is f16.click. Instagram, Kevin Mullins Photography, and Twitter, Kevin_Mullins.
It was great having you on. I'd love to have you back on again in the future, especially if you do another video. Definitely want to pick your brain about that and secretly learn from you.
Thanks, Mark. It's been fun.
No problem.
And there you go. That was Kevin Mullins. He is a fantastic photographer in the UK with the Fuji X series cameras. And it was a pleasure having him on the show. And I will definitely have him on some point in the future. Next week, we are going to have Andrew Billington on the show. We recorded just this past week and had an awesome chat with him. And I can't wait to share that that interview with you guys. And I hope you enjoyed this interview. It's been a while since I got to interview a photographer. And I think I shook off that interview rust off me. It was a lot of fun. And I could say for certain that it was great fun interviewing Andrew. And I'll give you guys a little tease in that the next interview involves a robot, a baby, and a little bit of flash photography. So there you go. Little teaser for next week. And in the meantime, again, I hope you guys really enjoyed the show this week. If you do enjoy the show, head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. That will certainly help us in other people finding the show. And leave us a review too. If you don't want to leave a review, just mention your favorite photography gear that you'd like to use. Which of the X series cameras do you like the best? Are you looking forward to getting? Once again, thank you very much for listening. So happy that you guys enjoyed the show, and we'll see you guys next week. The music for this episode comes from Ben Sound. If you're looking for royalty-free music for your shows, go ahead and check out www.bensound.com.